The speaker that we get to hear from is Amy Conroy. She's actually going to be giving two back-to-back presentations, so I'm going to introduce her once, and then she can go into her next presentation after this one. She's currently a doctoral student in the Department of Health and Behavioral Sciences at the University of Colorado, Denver. She's an MPH student from the Colorado School of Public Health. She has her MPH from the Colorado School of Public Health, and the research being presented today forms the basis of her doctoral dissertation examining how gender-based power imbalances influence HIV testing-related behavior in sub-Saharan Africa, and she recently received a predoctoral fellowship from the NIMH to support her research. Congratulations. So her first study is Getting Caught in the Cobweb, How the Timing of HIV Testing Matters, and her second is The Relationship Dynamics and HIV Testing Behavior, a couple study from Southern Malawi. So please welcome Amy Conroy.
Good afternoon. I'm actually going to be presenting those in the opposite order. And so I'm going to take us kind of full circle back to the African context, looking at relationship factors associated with HIV testing histories in rural Malawi. I have no relationships to disclose. So as we all know, HIV testing and counseling serves as the gateway to care treatment in HIV prevention services. However, there's been several areas of concern with testing. One area is that testing uptake is unfortunately less than ideal in many African settings. And in improving HIV testing programs requires an understanding of the barriers to uptake in the general population at risk. In addition to some of the structural barriers around access to HIV testing and antiretroviral therapy, the literature cites a host of demographic and psychosocial factors that influence uptake, including low education level, stigma has been a major factor in the literature, and discrimination, as well as confidentiality and privacy concerns, and finally, low perceived risk of HIV, which I'll talk more about in the next slide. Less research has explicitly studied the relationship level and how couple context promotes or hinders uptake of HIV testing. And this is despite the fact that HIV testing decisions, like sexual behavior, are made in a dyadic context. So even if individuals are making choices themselves to test, their choices are influenced by not only their own perceptions of risk, but the risk of their partners, as well as their how they anticipate a partner will respond if they bring up testing. The term gender inequality has been kind of used as the umbrella term in the literature to cite how power imbalances related to gender may affect testing uptake. And several findings come from this smaller body of literature. The first area focuses on male control over female use of testing services. So several studies cite that a common reason for women's refusal to test is needing permission from their partners before they go. And second, there's also the fear of the negative consequences of bringing up testing or going for testing that may play a role, such as divorce or violence. However, I want to point out that these fears of the consequences are not necessarily the actual consequences that occur in reality. And finally, as I mentioned before, perceptions of risk that go beyond the individual and include partners' past sexual behavior as well as their risk are important contextual factors. So a study from Malawi shows that women worry more about getting HIV from unfaithful partners, whereas men worry about getting HIV from their extramarital partners. And so some research shows that women who suspect their partners have other partners are more likely to test. But I want to point out that perceived risk for HIV can be both a facilitator, as we've seen in some of the previous presentations, as well as a barrier to testing. And so some studies actually cite that people who are at higher risk for HIV are actually less likely to test because of they may overestimate their chances of infection, and they may be more worried about disclosing their results and having to change pleasurable sexual behavior. So the general emphasis on the literature has been on women's perspective over men's, which unfortunately results in this incomplete understanding of how relationship factors relate to the use of HIV testing services. In addition, most studies focus on the testing uptake measure of ever tested or recently tested as if it's a one-time event. However, this is problematic for several reasons. For one, it limits our ability to make causal statements about the relationship between these factors and uptake. And second, a single HIV test isn't enough to prevent HIV. And so as HIV testing continues to expand throughout the region, more people will return to health centers to be tested again. And so in an effort to expand upon this body of literature, the present study examines the role of relationship-level factors, particularly power, by using a longitudinal HIV testing history data set collected over a period of 16 months among a sample of couples from Malawi. So the study uses data collected from the Blaka district of Malawi, as indicated on the figure with the arrow, and the overall rate of HIV in Malawi among adults of reproductive age is around 11%. However, the southern district has substantially higher rates at upwards of 15%. A recent demographic health survey showed that 73% of women and 53% of men have ever tested for HIV, which is actually a substantial increase from previous data. And this may be attributed in part to these shifts that are currently going on from client-initiated testing to provider-initiated testing, particularly in the antenatal care settings. So I used Wingood and DiClemente's theory of gender and power to develop my measures and conceptualize power, which consists of these three social structures related to labor, power, and social norms. The data come from the Sogolo-Latanzi study, which examines how young adults who have grown up during the HIV/AIDS epidemic make decisions about marriage, childbearing, and sexual behavior. Using a household listing of the Blaka district, a random sample of women aged 15 to 25 was drawn, and each woman could recruit up to three male partners using incentive-based tokens. So the study took place from 2009 to 2012 over eight waves of data collection over four-month increments. In wave three, I was able to add a special module on relationship power to the partnership survey. And this module captured a variety of different aspects of power, including decision-making, control, communication, et cetera. Then I used a factor analysis to kind of group the items that hung together statistically and to develop a measure of power for the Malawi context. So in the factor analysis, two subscales emerged. I later dropped the second factor due to slightly lower reliability. The first factor I named relationship unity, and it consisted of three items. My partner shows they care about me. When I need my partner's assistance, he or she is there to help me. And my partner and I sit down and discuss important matters together. And respondents could answer these items on using a four-point Likert scale. This figure shows the main predictor variables and the outcome variable that I used in my analysis. Relationship power consisted of relationship unity, which I just discussed, and also a single item measure of relationship dominance. I also looked at perceived infidelity of a partner, since this was a really important variable in the literature, and also it emerged in my factor analysis that I later dropped. I looked at two perceived risk measures of self and of partner, and then I looked at a history of intimate partner violence, physical abuse, and sexual coercion. The outcome variable was having a new HIV test in wave 4, 5, 6, or 7 from the previous wave, and this was the binary measure. I included a number of statistical controls in my models, and I used random effects models using the XT-Logic command in Stata to test for the association between these and having a new test over the 16-month period. Quickly, this shows the sociodemographic characteristics of the sample. On average, over the entire sample, the average age was around 24. Men were, on average, 5 years older than women. Men had at least a full year of education over women, but nevertheless, it reflects a primary school education. The average number of household goods, which is a proxy of household economic status, was around 3. Most respondents were married, and given that this was a couple sample, they were biased towards more serious partnerships. The average relationship duration was around 5 years, and the majority of respondents had at least one child together. Now, very quickly, the mean score for the unity measure was around 3.77 and was almost identical between men and women. Men were more likely to report being in a male-dominated relationship than women were. Men reported a higher likelihood of being at risk for HIV, however, slightly lower likelihood of their partner being infected. Men and women reported relatively equal perception of their partner having an affair, and then unsurprisingly, women reported higher levels of forced sex and physical abuse as compared to men. So this figure shows the baseline testing history of the sample when they entered the study, and this was captured with this ever-testing measure, or lifetime testing. So over the total sample, which was 932 respondents, 72% had been previously tested. Women were more likely to test than men, and these numbers reflect estimates at the national level as well. This figure shows the cumulative number of new HIV tests from wave 4 to 7 for respondents who participated in each wave, so that was around 800 respondents. Around 53% of respondents had no new tests over the period, 22% had one new test, 13% had two new tests, and another 13% had more than two tests. So this table shows the multivariate random effects models predicting a new HIV test over waves 4 through 7. For relationship unity for women, the results show that for each one unit increase in unity power, the odds of having a new HIV test decreased by 45% after controlling for these other covariates. Women who were in a male-dominated relationship were 77% more likely to be tested. Surprisingly, perceived risk of self and partner did not play a role in whether they were tested. Women who perceived that their partners were cheating were 23% more likely to be tested. There was a trend towards significance for women who experienced forced sex in testing, and then no relationship found with physical abuse. For men, we show that for relationship unity and male dominance, the direction of the association is the same as it was for women, however non-significant. Men who perceive themselves to be slightly more at risk for HIV were less likely to test, but the perception of their partner's risk did not play a role, nor did perceived infidelity of a partner. Men who experienced feeling coerced into sex were 69% less likely to be tested, and physical abuse did not play a role. So, what does this all mean? I think the results show that the relationship factors do play a role in HIV testing uptake. However, I think the results are more conclusive for women than for men. Young women in relationships characterized by high levels of unity and trust were less likely to test for HIV, perhaps because they see less reason to. HIV testing may conflict with relationship ideals around love, trust, and intimacy. And some parallels can be drawn from the condom use literature that shows that in marriages, condoms are to be seen as an intruder in marriage or something that's incompatible with marriage in a relationship where you trust your partner. Some of the gender differences in the unity results, I think, could be attributed in part to the way that HIV risk is conceptualized in a partnership. So for women, decisions to test may be more closely tied to interpersonal factors related to their spouse, and that's why we saw the unity having a strong role in women's uptake. However, for men, their risk may be more conceptualized in terms of their extramarital partners, and so we did not see the same relationship for men. Obviously, the study has some limitations. These are self-reported HIV history testing data and are subject to recall bias. And then also, there's the inability to decipher the mode of testing, so client-initiated versus provider-initiated. Although we did adjust for months being pregnant in our analysis, and antenatal care is the main provider-initiated form of testing. So more research is needed to understand these findings related to male dominance and sexual coercion and uptake of testing, given that they conflict with what has been found in the literature. From a programmatic perspective, HIV testing programs need to consider that these decisions to test they go beyond the individual level and are often made in this broader social context and are influenced by factors related to unity and trust. And finally, considering that most new HIV infections occur within stable partnerships, such as marriage, It seems important that testing messages should encourage married couples to regularly test, not just when they first get married or when they're having children, but throughout the course of their relationship as they continuously navigate new pathways of risk. I'd like to acknowledge my funding sources and my two mentors, Sarah Yateman and Sheena Bull, for their valuable feedback.